What up, Whiskey Ginger fans? Welcome back to the show. Like I always say, welcome if it's your first time. If it ain't, hey, we're here again. We're back, baby. Got a great episode today. My newfound pal, buddy, whatever you want to call it. We're adults, so it's really weird to gauge how the friendship is. Mark Maron's on the show. He's incredible. I'm on tour. Let's go. We opened up tickets. COVID is done skis. I love it. I'm going to be in Houston. I'm going to be in Madison. Hey, Madison, we open up the tickets. If you're in Madison, Wisconsin, come out and see your boy. I'm also going to be in Nashville. I'm going to be in Boston. We're putting up a bunch of dates as we go. Go to AndrewSantino.com for tickets. AndrewSantino.com for them tickets. Let's go. If you want more Whiskey Ginger content, go to Patreon.com/WhiskeyGingerPodcast. That's where I do the solo eps. That's where I do the Cheeto chats, Zooms with the top tier, discounts for Moich, all sorts of fun stuff. Speaking of merch, if you're on YouTube, look down below. There are the shirts. Or go to AndrewSantinoStore.com. Either way, come see me live. AndrewSantino.com. That's where you get them tickets. Enough rambling from me. Let's go to the episode.
In here, we pour whiskey.
You are that creature in the ginger beard.
Sturdy and ginger.
Like vampires, the ginger gene is a curse.
Gingers are beautiful.
You owe me $5 for the whiskey and $75 for the horse.
Gingers are hell no.
This whiskey is excellent.
Ginger. I like gingers.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Whiskey Ginger. My guest today is one of my favorite people on earth. I say that for all my guests, but I mean it once again today. Mark Maron. Mark, thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah, welcome back. Have you already been here? Are you rejoining?
I'm rejoining, yeah.
What happened before me?
You know exactly what happened before
you. Did you just talk? Or
a comedy whirlwind happened before you.
Oh my God, who am I following?
I can't even tell you, man. Oh, it's insane.
Fuck,
it's
man.
A big secret.
Is it Amazing Jonathan again?
Yeah, it is.
God damn
Can
it.
Can I tell you something?
Did he cut off his hand?
He cut off his ear. He Van Gogh'd it live on my show.
God,
are these
damn.
Chairs okay for you? Because Judd Apatow complained the entire time about the chairs.
Really? Did he complain for as long a time as his movies last?
So good to set you up for something. I was like, I'll just slide this in and let him either pick up that card or just take the hit.
I know I'm going to get in trouble. I don't know why I've decided.
Why? That's fine. It's a joke. He's a comedian. He should get it.
I know, but I've done it before, kind of on Twitter. I've brought it to his attention before, but I can't stop myself now.
Well.
Because like his movies are always like two movies in one.
They're very
it's like,
long.
Hey, there's the end of that movie. What's this now?
I didn't shy away.
Yeah.
My wife told me, don't not ask him what you wanted to ask him. And I said to him, I said, hey, I'm going to put you on the spot. I read for you four times, like did table reads.
Oh, wow.
And I said, how come you never put me in anything?
Wow. So you live that life because like I've never read for him, but I know him well.
Yeah.
Ish. Like yeah. He likes my podcast and stuff. And he knows I act. He knows I'm okay at
He's
it.
He's seen you.
He knows I
By
can do it.
By this point,
And he
it's
knows
not
I'm
a mystery.
Pretty funny. Yeah. Nothing. Never anything. Not even a two-liner, nothing.
So here's the last thing I said to him on when he came on the show. I said, I would do table reads for him, particularly if they were emergency table reads. I'd get calls
you
from guys.
You did them.
I would do them all the time.
And he knows that.
He was there. He called my phone.
Oh, okay.
He would go, hey, can you come to Sony? Can you
oh,
come
see,
to-
Oh, see, you're that guy then.
And I would go.
Yeah, you're that guy.
But
then.
You know what I don't?
What?
I don't do it anymore. I said, I can't do those anymore. I said, I love you, but to everyone that asked me, I would do favors for people all the time.
Really, table reads are no good?
I don't like doing them because all they're asking you usually is, hey, we think you're very good at this thing. You can kind of chameleon in the room and you can play a bunch of different characters.
Right, right. But so could you do this while we wait to see if the guy we want to do it
Correct.
Is going to-
Jesse Plemons, really, we're really egging for him. So if you could just fill in for JP, well,
yeah.
I mean, that's really what it is. And you can feel it in your bones, especially when they come up to you afterwards and they're like, so good. Oh my God, so good. And you're like, oh,
yeah, you really helped us out.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks for being there.
No problem. Thank you guys.
You made it sound like, you know, we didn't know if some of that stuff would work and you really.
Yeah, it really, we think it'll work out of Jesse Plemons' mouth. Yeah. All right. Did you guys validate?
Can we say that out loud?
Yeah. No, but it's just a, it's a vibe I got over.
The chairs, first of all, fine. They're fine with me.
Good.
I don't need to complain about
Judd.
The chairs. But I am breaking in. Are you breaking in shoes too?
No, these are my old, these are old company. You know what's, these are, I put the, took these out of the garage.
Mm.
These are my usually like doing shit outside shoes. But I see these are breaking in. These Merrells?
No, man. I just got these in the mail from Keens for nothing. So I get sent stuff.
Yeah.
And I sent back some boots.
Okay.
And then they sent these. And these were not what I was expecting. I just want hiking, man. I just want hiking equipment. I wouldn't wear these in public, but I got them right before I came here. So I figured
you might as
no
well.
One's going to see it.
Yeah, but we have cameras outside of there's TMZs always outside of here.
Oh.
But I hire them.
I should take these off.
No, man, leave them on. Wait, why wouldn't you wear them in public? What's wrong with those?
There's nothing wrong with them. It's just not my thing, you know? These to me have a purpose. And yeah. They're not like going to the Comedy Store. They're not doing a podcast. That I put them on, I go up a mountain.
True. Yeah.
You know, the other boots more fashion oriented. I don't wear sneakers really because I'm a grown person.
Okay. All right. You know what? You're one button too low and the attitude is hot right now. You're showing a lot of tit on my show. You know what though? I do know I've never seen you not wear boots, so that I should have known that when I saw those on you.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, that would have been awkward.
What's your most expensive pair of boots?
Probably $500.
That's a lie.
No, it's true.
Mark, you have a lot of money. There's no chance you
have. I
know,
but I don't spend it. You know what I bought?
Yeah.
I don't really. I drive an Avalon
I like that. That's
in
nice.
In cash. I like that car.
Yeah, it's a nice car.
I bought it. I could have leased it, but leasing feels like renting to me. I don't know what the point of it is.
Correct, yeah.
I have a nice stereo system. I did spend $6,000 on an old guitar, but outside of that, I'm not a big spender. What do I have?
What are you doing with it then?
I don't know.
There's nothing.
I know that I can eat anywhere I want to.
Yeah. Once I got to that point in my life, I was very satisfied.
Yeah. It's
once
sort
you
of,
go,
you
I can
think about
eat
it.
And that doesn't matter.
You go buy groceries. I don't know. What does it pay?
I have no idea.
Sometimes you go like, what the fuck did I buy?
Right.
Oh, it's that the vitamins.
Right.
$100. Right. You take those.
Yeah. Almonds. Yeah. Are almonds that expensive?
$90 for almonds?
Put them back.
Yeah. So I don't, I'm going to start spending money. Thank you,
you
for reminding me. Like what? What should
Well, here's why. One of my dad's best friends is now, he's getting to the point when his financial advisor said, hey man, you're not going to last much longer. He's in his late 70s.
What are you doing? Yeah.
Dude, what's going on?
Yeah.
What are you going to do with this money?
Yeah.
Your kids are set up. Yeah. Your wife is happy.
Right.
You guys live spend them fucking money.
Yeah.
Dude, this guy will still fly coach and he has a fuckload of money.
I
know, but that's my thing is my dad was like, what's your deal? And he finally got around to like admitting to himself this fear from his father and, you know.
Well, you got to save it. It's like comics have it too. I have it too.
Oh, I still have it. Back.
Yeah, where you're like, I don't know how long it's going to last.
Right, this could run out today.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Maybe there's going to be some weird meltdown with the infrastructure of the banks. A hack attack. I'm going to lose everything.
Right. So you know, I don't want to have lease payments that I can't afford. I don't want to have things that. That's
I don't carry any debt.
Yeah, me neither.
You don't?
No, zero. Literally none.
Do you have a house?
Yeah. That's the debt I have.
I bought the house.
See, I thought about that, but I was told not to buy it all cash.
I know, but that's like because money people think that. It's like, hey, man, if you buy it all, that means all that money that you could be making money with, you dumped it into the house. Stupid.
Yeah.
Whereas if you just get a good low mortgage rate, right, and you're just chipping away at that, then you have all this other money to make a lot of money with.
Right. So that's I should just buy the house?
Huh?
I should buy it outright.
Well, I don't know. It depends what kind of money guy. Are you a money guy? Do you care about that stuff? Are you on top of it? Do you have crypto? Do you understand the world?
I did not do crypto.
I don't know anything about it.
Do you know why? Because
why?
It's so vague to me that I stay away from stuff I know nothing about.
Well, you know what? How I deal with money? I got a guy that I trust because he's a family friend. It doesn't mean he won't bilk me.
He will.
No, he won't.
Mm-hmm.
His mother is my mom's best friend.
I've heard this story 1,000 times. Could you believe it? His mom was my mother's best friend. Yeah. It's such an easy way for him
all
to get you.
All of it gone.
Yeah.
Gone. They don't even know where he is.
The Mark Maron true story. That's the clip they use.
Oh, now
all
I'm in
gone.
This. Now I'm in this trailer. I'm in a trailer. I was on set and I just told him I wanted to keep the trailer.
Can we give Mark the trailer? He's going through a tough time.
Tough time. Not even a good one. Half a trailer.
Your money guy says what? He says, Mark, you're fine with money. Buy the house.
No. I had an accountant that I made my business manager. That guy's been my accountant since I was like 20.
Okay.
And he used to handle a lot of us. And I think he still has a few of us.
Sure.
From New York and from, I think he burrs with him. And I got Tom to call him. He's been a comic guy for a long time.
Hold on one second. Is his initials BL?
No.
Okay.
No. H-A.
Okay.
Well, we can talk about it. Harvey Altman.
I just threw out a name. Oh. I just threw out letters. I had no idea.
I got the money manager,
right?
And he's the guy that usually says, well, maybe you ought to do this, maybe you don't do that. Maybe the guy who handles the money, you know, the guy who's got my portfolio or whatever,
sure,
he just knows I'm conservative, I don't want to take any big chances, and you know, just keep my money making a little money,
little tiny bits of money. You don't do big risks ever, huh?
Not really. I mean, I could. Sometimes I think about it, but I'm always glad I don't, because I don't think they would have worked out.
Yeah, but also,
like, do you have another property? Do you have a rent? Do you have it owned a second property?
I'm invested in another, in two other things.
Really?
Yeah.
Here?
No.
Elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a partner in a rental property in where?
In Colorado Springs.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Are you from Colorado?
No.
So some guy just talked to you.
It was a business manager. My business manager's. A partner of his had this equity opportunity.
See, this is another one of those stories. That's the same story that you were telling about me.
I know. Look, but if I lose that money, it wasn't that much where it's going to kill me.
If they show up and go like, you know, what you didn't realize is now you owe.
Good. Then I'm running. I'm getting the gun and I'm running. I'm getting in the car and I'm. Did you hear what happened to Santino? That's my story.
I hate.
He was on the run for the rest.
Are you
of his
a sucker
life.
In general?
No, honestly, no, because I'm cheap. I'm quite cheap. So you can't sucker me because I'm a cheapo.
I'm hypervigilant because my dad's a sucker. One of the great suckers, my father.
Like anybody could get your dad.
Oh, God.
It's embarrassing.
Like, you know, when I was growing up, someone talked him into a silk screening business. How is that even a good idea?
Dad.
A silk screening business.
Never going to take off.
So I thought like, well, this is a good opportunity for me. Now, I don't think I've ever told that story. Like he had big stake in this dumb silk screening business that some doctor's brother had dragged him into. His buddy, my dad's a doctor. They're the worst.
Doctors?
He was a doctor. The worst.
Doctors are the worst people?
Well, no, they just see him coming. Because they don't know anything about money.
Right.
They know about bones.
Doctors.
Right.
Doctor stuff.
So he's a partner in this fucking silk screening business. I'm in Boston, like sweating away, drinking myself into oblivion. I don't think I was in college anymore. I can't remember. But I'm like, I got this great idea for a t-shirt. So I'm like, my dad's got a silk screening business.
Perfect.
So I designed this t-shirt that was basically, it was the slogan of Massachusetts. And it had, the parking tickets in Massachusetts were this orange color. And if you get a lot of them, they put a boot on your car.
Oh, yeah,
seen that. They were just all over the place, right? These orange park. So I had this silk screen idea. It was like a orange parking ticket on an American flag. With the logo of, with the slogan of Massachusetts on it. It was clever, I guess.
I like it.
But it was the one shirt, right? And I went and got a permit to sell them on the street. And I thought, this is it, man.
I'm going to be a millionaire.
Oh, yeah. I got boxes of these shirts. And I went out there and I stood on Boston Commons with my one shirt and my permit, sold two.
Hey.
And the rejection was too much for me to handle. So I had that box of shirts.
So you became a comedian instead?
Sure. I was already a comedian, but I wasn't getting paid.
Right.
But I had the box of shirts.
Where are they now?
I got them.
You do?
No.
God, I wish you did
30
so
years
bad.
Later.
People hold on to shit like you wouldn't believe.
I'm going to get rid of it.
You got to get rid of stuff.
You do?
You got to get rid of
have
stuff.
Have you?
Yes. I don't know.
How old are you?
I have almost nothing. 37.
How much could you have?
A lot of bullshit in my
garage. What'd you get rid of?
Everything. All old, like, I collected stuff from, like, my college years. I had old shit in a big bin from stuff that I was like, why would I even hold on to any of this stuff? It was just, like, also old notebooks I finally threw away.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
The evidence?
Yeah, I don't
the
give
evolution?
A fuck.
The evolution?
All that stuff.
What about the Santino Library
what
at
are
the
they
college
gonna,
you went to?
Burn it. Burn it to the ground.
What about the archives?
Burn it.
The estate?
Burn
nothing?
It. What's that artist? Why can't I think of him? John.
I don't even know what.
He burned his entire.
Oh.
Art collection
that
and
was
started
his thing?
From scratch. Why can't I think of his name? It was like what was happening was he was getting all this criticism from one of his agents or managers of why aren't you putting out some of this stuff?
Yeah.
John the Baldessari. John
oh,
Baldessari.
Baldessari. Yeah.
And Baldessari said, I don't fucking want to put it out. Why do you keep egging me about it?
Yeah.
And his agent was like, well, I just really think there's some value in some of that stuff. And he goes, I don't like it or that's not done yet.
Yeah.
And so he said he had, you know, this impetus one night. He was like, oh, fuck this. You know what? And he burned all of it.
Well, that's...
I like it.
But that's a statement from an artist. You, like, you know, I guess if you don't care about that shit, no one's going to care about it. I mean, I know.
That's what I mean, though.
My big fear... I used to do a bit about that. Like, you keep all this shit, and what's going to happen to it is, like, my mother... If I die, my mother and my brother are going to be like, I don't know, should we...
Throw it out. Now we have to throw it. That's what my dad said. When he cleaned out my grandmother's house, he goes, honestly, just throw everything away. Don't keep any of our shit. That's how I feel. What am I going to do with it?
But the weird thing is over the pandemic, you know, I was, I'd gone through, I was doing live IGs, Instagrams, and I found my old notebooks, not notebooks, my old calendars from like the 90s.
That's cool.
Well, it's cool because like, I don't remember. Right. You know, your memory is limited, but if you go through your calendar and you're like, oh, that gig, oh shit, that was terrible.
Yeah.
Like, and I could do it. Like I could see where I was on weekends and there were clubs I've forgotten, one-nighters and shit.
Right.
And it all starts to come back to you.
Did you remember the money too? Did you remember those?
Some of it's written down.
You'd mark it, be like-
$125. $75. And you had to drive 3 hours to that one.
So you pretty much broke even every time you did those gigs.
Nah, I mean, like, I don't know. It's hard for me to remember that stuff because it was- When I started, it was a one-nighter thing. It was Boston. So it was regional one-nighters. That's how it worked. Two-man shows.
Drive in, drive home.
Half hour, 45 for the closer. So you have two-man shows when I was starting out. So I avoided opening for the most part and went straight to a half hour, you know, kind of one-nighter trip where you just guerrilla shit, where you're walking into a place that doesn't do comedy to do comedy.
Yes.
Set the stage.
Put
for
down
some
your
other...
forks. There's some comedians getting
we
on
turned
stage.
The TV off. No?
No? All right, fellas, talk over the TVs.
But, you know, I don't know. It wasn't a break-even thing. If you stacked up enough gigs and you were, we lived differently then, man.
Yeah. Well, it was also.
I lived in an attic. I paid rent. If I had $800 in the bank, I was like, thank God.
You're a millionaire.
I'm going to be okay.
Right.
I don't know if I ever thought I was a millionaire. But
I thought I was rich the first time I made a couple of bucks off of a gig. I was like, well, if this is it, if I can make this for the rest of my life, I was okay with it.
Yeah.
I was like, if I could just make a couple of $100 every gig.
Oh, man.
I would just gig. I could just do this as much as I can and I'd be okay. That's how I used to feel.
I was so stupid. When I look back on the club stuff, like when I was featuring or even when I was headlining on the off weeks or whatever they were, I never drew as a headliner. But I didn't know these motherfuckers. I couldn't understand, given what I was making as a feature, how headliners were making a good living. But they were all doing these door deals.
Because
you do door deals now, you're like, totally fuck. Like, if you work a weekend at like Comedy Works in Denver and you do a door deal and you sell out and they show you your check, you're like, is that? Are you sure? Yeah. Okay. You know, and that's what they were doing in the 80s, like a lot of those big guys.
And this was the same money back then.
Close, probably.
That's what I'm saying. So with inflation, much didn't change today. They were making that money now, which is...
I never got it. And I was so thrilled to have an $800 feature week, Wednesday through Sunday.
Right.
I was like, I'm killing it. $800 for 12 shows?
You're living the good life.
Yeah.
Because you can't imagine... Because you worked a lot of... Didn't you work shitty regular guy jobs?
A few.
See, I worked enough of them over the years. I started when I was 15 and like McDonald's was the beginning.
You started working when you were 15?
Yeah.
I
didn't stop working until I quit in 2010. I always had a job until in 2010 I could quit and do comedy full time.
I always had jobs, but they were shitty, but they were kind of cool. Like my first job in high school, I became like a shift manager of this bagel joint right across from the university owned by this lunatic coke addict. And he liked me and he gave me this job and it was cool college kids. And I started as a counter guy. Doing short order shit. And then I got, and then he made me a shift manager. So it was a McDonald's. And there's all these cool college girls
around. See, mine was sad. It was embarrassing.
Well, it was pretty standard, yeah.
It's McDonald's, but it was also like people would see you from high school that you knew and you were like, fuck.
Oh, it's weird. Yeah, I had that. That happened later after I came out to LA that first time and got fucked up on drugs and went back to Boston where I started. Yeah. And I got a job at a coffee place. It was pre-Starbucks and it was right in Harvard Square. And, I was just a barista at this place called the Coffee Connection that was literally upstairs from Catch a Rising Star. And I remember like Dave Cross and CK would come in. And Louis used to tell a story about why he decided I was an okay guy. He doesn't like me now. But back then.
He doesn't like you now.
No.
Maybe maybe he does and you just don't know it.
No, he's very mad at me. Yeah. What am I going to do? Right. You know what I mean? I was. Were we supposed to die on that hill, all of us? So. But he thought I was an asshole, but then he saw me at one of those dishwashers. Do you remember those dishwashers that you had to open up?
Of course. I did that. Yes.
You had to rinse out the fucking, right. So I was doing that
in
the coffee shop and he looked over there's like, and he just saw miserable me spraying those glasses out. And he's like, he's okay.
That kid's not bad.
In here, we pour whiskey.
Hey, everybody. If you're looking to turn your cool idea into something tangible and legit, like a website, or you want to sell stuff on the internet, and you want to create a page to blog from, whatever you want to do, get your voice out there, whatever it is, you got to use Squarespace. I use Squarespace, and I've told you this before, I'm not a smart person. So it was very, very easy. You can showcase all your work there, and they have such incredible templates for you to use. It's so easy. Even a dumbo like me can do it. They got 24/7 award-winning customer support. They got free and secure hosting, nothing to patch or upgrade ever, which is great because others do. And they've got built-in search engine optimization, so they can tell you analytics from who's visiting your site to who's purchasing stuff or who's clicking on stuff or who's coming from where. Squarespace really does make it simple and easy to create beautiful stuff using their templates or just going at it on your own. So if you're looking to make a website, trust me, this is the answer to all of your problems. Go to squarespace.com/whiskey, as it were, for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code whiskey to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. No matter what it is, domains, websites, online stores, marketing tools, they got it all in one. Go to squarespace.com/whiskey for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, use the offer code whiskey for 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Ginger. I like gingers.
That does give you a moment of humility when someone sees you working with your hands.
Like especially just, like that. I mean, yeah, it's like dishwasher's like the job. It's the saddest job in the world.
It is. You're all alone.
It's the punchline.
But at least now I saw I was talking to the dishwasher. I just did Addison Improv and I said hi to him for a second. I was by the kitchen and I was like, you know, I didn't want to pry too much at him, but he said this big smile on his face and took out his headphones. He's like, I think I'm going to be able to see you the last show. I go, oh, right on, man.
Yeah.
And I was like, how's it going back here? And he's like, it's great, dude. I put on some tunes or podcasts and I just fucking disappear. And I was like, I guess that's great. Because when I was doing dishwashing and busing and all that shit in the restaurants in college, it was sad. I was alone. You were tucked in a weird corner. Nobody had headphones and cell phones and podcasts and it didn't exist. I sat there with no music, just listening to my own sadness as I sprayed off of the shit off of these plates.
And it's just ringing.
It's all your future. It's all you hear.
I worked at the food services when I was in college. I worked behind, I served food.
To college students.
To peers.
Yeah.
I worked at two of them. My buddy Lance, who was my roommate, he worked back there too in the kitchen. It was just a gig you could get.
Yeah.
But so I made it sort of a performative thing. You know, I used to rename the dishes, like to see if people like.
What? Like what?
Well, like they just have dumb, like they would make these like a Greek casserole or something. And I'd add like things like the pride of kings or something like that. Then people would like ask for it seriously. I'll have the pride of kings. And I just sit there.
As you must. As you must, my lord.
I'd always rename shit and I'd fuck with people. And I used it as a performing space. Like I never thought they were looking down at me because I was.
You never felt that way? You never felt that way at a job where people saw you do something publicly and you're never like, oh, they're judging me and I can feel it?
Yeah, comedy.
but that one you ask for.
Yeah, I guess.
We're asking for it.
No,
like,
I mean,
like, did you ever have a gig where a girl who you liked saw you doing it and you were like, well, this is the worst feeling I've ever had in my fucking life?
I feel like I have, but like, I was usually in restaurants, so it wasn't terrible.
That's not too bad.
Yeah. You know, and I usually could give people free food. Like, I had a little juice.
See, I valeted, I valeted a girl and a guy she was hanging out with's car that I had like kind of crushed on. And it made me feel like I didn't exist in the world.
I think I've had those feelings just in life.
Yeah. You know, you have them all the time.
Without the job.
Yeah. But it's even worse because I'm doing a service for them.
Yeah.
They out of a car. I have to drive his car. And she's like, what's up? How are you? And I'm like, fucking, I want to disappear. I could light myself on fire if I had it.
I have felt the opposite of that, where I've driven such a shitty car to events where they got to park the car.
Oh, I like
felt
that.
Like, sorry, man. Do you want me to do it? I'll park.
I kind of want another car that's a total piece of shit whenever I go to something nice and show up with that, because that makes me feel, I like that exchange. That's better to be like, yeah,
I used to drive up in this fucking shitty 2006 gray Camry that I eventually sold to Ryan Singer for like nothing. Had like 150,000 miles on. I just, in my mind, I'm like, what do I need a new car for? And I would drive up to events at like the London and be in that car.
Dope.
And then in my mind, I'm like, I got to fucking change this. I mean, mm-hmm. I can afford this, right?
Yeah, but you don't give a fuck about cars.
I don't, but here's what I did. I'm like, you know, I'm going to get a brand new black Camry.
Moving up, dude. Yeah,
and I did.
Just you guys wait and see.
And I felt good about it because at least it was clean. It was black. It was a new car.
Right.
Still a Camry, but I didn't feel like an asshole.
But I guess those are the things. Like for me, I've got little things that I will. Like I always had crushes on cars as a kid. I was obsessed.
Yeah.
And so like that's something I want. I always kind of want to spend a little bit of money on. Like I just feel like those things are okay with me because I've wanted
them
for so long. I fuck
things up so quickly. The obsession isn't worth it. Like right now, for some reason, I'm spinning out about everything. Like I made it through lockdown. You know, I stayed lean. I stayed sane. You know, I had personal tragedy in my life. I got past that a bit. But I didn't lose my mind or get fat. But for some reason,
right.
Now we're coming out of it. And I'm like, I'm just shoving bread into my face. And I'm like freaking out about fucking everything. Just ridiculous shit, man.
Yeah.
And
what's plaguing you the most?
Well, everything happens at the same frequency for me. Mm. Like, you know, like I'm out of coffee filters. Shit, I lost my foot. You know, there's no difference in intensity of anything. So it's all overwhelming. Like I threw away two entire watermelons last night. And I was angry.
Why?
Because it's not quite watermelon season, and I've got a system where I know how to pick a watermelon. So I figured, like, and I've already had two duds, and it made me mad. So I bought, I wanted some more melons. So I bought two. I figured at one of these is going to be all right. Both of them suck. So at 12:30 last night, I was angrily throwing watermelon away.
That's like a cartoon of an event that happened in somebody's life. How do you... By the way, I've never bought a watermelon in my life.
I like watermelon.
Yeah, but what an egregious lopsided thing to have to carry out of the grocery store. How do you do that with bags?
What?
Two bags and a watermelon?
Well, either you put it in the bag or you put it in the cart on its
own.
Don't buy it.
Get them at the store when you eat it with a meal.
You buy them sliced section. I like cold watermelon. I like to pick. I thought I had it down.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's quite seasoned yet. Here's another thing that happened. This is where I'm at. I have this bottle, this water bottle that I like.
Right.
It's a certain brand, but it didn't matter. It was swag. It was free. It was like a 23andMe water bottle. I don't even know how I got it.
Swell? Which one is it?
No, Liberty.
Liberty.
Do you know that?
Mm-hmm.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
With that top?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They're good, right?
They're very good.
They're fucking great.
Yeah.
Swell's terrible.
Yeah, Swell's shit.
All right. So it's a Liberty.
This episode sponsored by Swell.
But like my fucking cat, I got a kitten now, and I don't know what happened to the top, but it's gone. The top is gone.
Huh.
I don't know if it's in the garbage. I don't know if I'm going to find it somewhere eventually, but I've got my Liberty bottle that I like. I don't even care that it's 23andMe. No top. So I do some research. I find Liberty. I find the website. I buy five fucking bottles and two extra tops, all different colors, and an insulated bottle. Like, I'm going to show me. Like, what is that? And I'm full of spite. I'm like, I'm going to have a bunch of these.
You
now.
Just wait, me.
Yeah, exactly.
You just wait.
I'll show you.
By the way, that'll come and you'll have nothing to do with it.
Oh,
it won't exist anymore.
I'm going to throw away all the swells. Yeah, well, that's what happens with everything. Eventually, like the car I got. I fuck them up, man. I can't, like, that's why I can't get a new, everything I buy, I fuck up. I got some new shoes, like, that I kind of liked. I dropped, like, salad dressing on the leather. It's over for months. It's just the way I am. The Camry, I fucked up the door. This car is, I want to bring it in to get touched up.
Are you prone to these things?
No, it's just some, I don't know if it's a karma thing or what. I'm not really prone to it, but for the most part, within 2 or 3 weeks of me owning anything, I'll fuck it up a little bit. And live with it.
Do you think that's subconscious? You kind of like to fuck it up because if it's too shiny, it's annoying?
No, because like, because then I have to deal with the aggravation of that and then I have to wait it out. There's a lesson there, but I don't need to learn it every fucking time. But I do.
But you
do.
Obviously, the universe is saying that you do need to learn something.
Something
again.
Like, it's like maybe it's too much attachment to these things and that's why I don't spend money on things. I try to get free things as much as possible. And now when things get fucked up, because it happens to me so much, I'm like, yeah. What am I going to do?
Fuck it.
What happened to you? I don't know.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Do you give stuff away a lot? Do you do that?
Yeah.
Because we get free shit. And
what
at
are you
some
getting?
Point, just if sponsors send us stuff.
I got these boots.
Well, those are nicer than the shit I get.
But
I just give stuff away.
Yeah.
By the way,
what are you going to do with
do you
it?
Do you chew?
Tobacco?
Gum? No, you know, like not
Orbits.
Nicorette, but.
I'll chew Orbits.
No, but
all the time.
gum with nicotine in it?
I used to.
Not anymore?
I've been almost 2 years off of nicotine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You don't ever sneak it?
No, man. I was so fucking strung out, dude. I can't do anything because it's just all day.
Yeah.
We have too much time in our profession.
Yeah, it's nothing but
time. Are you kidding
me?
I mean, I'll drink 2 quarts of coffee a day until I'm like I have to nap. It's crazy.
You're like, that's like my grandmother would drink 2 pots of coffee.
Yeah. Because she had, we have the same time.
Yeah, you have this, nothing going on. She has nothing to fucking do.
No, but I was on nicotine. I would go to sleep with those lozenges in my mouth. I fucking loved them. I'd get up, I'd take one, and like all day long, just like half awake from nicotine lozenges. And sometimes, like when I was doing snus or dip or whatever,
yeah,
the packets, I'd fucking go to sleep with it in my mouth.
Shut up.
For real.
It wouldn't make you sick in the morning?
No, dude. I was sort of like, oh, my head. You know, like I'd wake up in the middle of the night, like,
slosh it out up. And knock out again?
Yeah.
Yuck. Yuck, dude. That's like, well, that's like, I knew people that fell asleep with cigarettes in bed. Like they would smoke in bed.
I never did that.
The old days of people smoking inside.
No.
Did you grow up with cigarettes indoors? Like mom and dad smoked inside?
No, my parents didn't really smoke. My mom smoked a little bit, but I smoked starting at like age 14. And I remember being on planes smoking in the, it had the smoking section on airplanes.
So cool.
In the back two rows or three rows?
Bring that back. Why not bring it back?
Can you even imagine that smell? Like what were the, everyone was so accustomed to it. There's no way you can smoke on a plane and not have that whole plane smell like fucking cigarettes.
Cloth seats too back then.
And we were just smoking them, filling up those ashtrays, drinking back there.
Yeah, see, I like that. I think there should be one airline that still captivates the old
days
like that.
That can still do the smoking?
Yeah, why not?
I just can't imagine. You can't even if someone lit a cigarette inside now, people would be like, what is happening?
Like it'd be pure panic.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. No, that is true. Except for, by the way, I was in, where were we? So it was a bar in Texas, and I was like, are people smoking in here? And they were like, yeah, no, you can still smoke inside this fucking bar. I was like, holy shit. I couldn't believe it. Yeah. The last time I saw someone at a bar smoking was college.
And do you
I was
smoke?
Like, I did for a while, and then I stopped.
What, you took it up later in life?
I did all through college, and then later in college, and then I quit probably 7-8 years ago. Look, but I will buy a pack once in a while and smoke secretly by myself.
I just had to like shut that
sad
part
weirdo.
Of, yeah, that part of my brain off somehow, because I smoke cigars. Like my problem is, like, I'm so addictive. Like, see, what always happens with me is I'll get off the lozenges, right, and I'll get clean from nicotine.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, one day, like 6 months later, I'll be like, I can have a cigar, just one.
Yeah,
I'll smoke that one cigar, and then within like 3 weeks, I'm smoking 2 or 3 cigars a day.
A day?
Yeah. I'm just sitting out there smoking them.
Like an old Southern guy on a porch. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. And then I got to get back on the nicotine to get off the cigars.
To wean away again.
But yeah,
you never did cold turkey?
Not until this last time. But like I haven't smoked cigarettes in forever. But the lozenges and the cigar thing, I just love it. I love. I guess my point was, is there, you can go to cigar stores and smoke in there.
I know, I like that. And you can sit outside and there's like a community kind of.
Worst community, dude.
I know. It's the people you don't want to hang out with.
Because I travel, right? And when you travel, you got to find your shit. Like, so sometimes I bring cigars, sometimes I wouldn't. So I look up the fucking cigar place in like one of the roads, one of the gigs I was doing, mm-hmm. and go drive there. And there'd just be this community of fucking dudes, 5 dudes sitting there like they're king shit, smoking their middle of the road cigars.
Yeah, but I bet you those guys have stories.
One idiot holding court. Sure they do.
Yeah, I want to know. I like getting those little weird nooks.
The thing I love about those things is they give you the weird stink eye when you get there. They're like, huh.
Who the fuck is this guy?
A stranger.
You know, what's going
they're
on?
Not inviting.
No, you know no, 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 they're not. No, you're in their house.
Yeah.
They're in there. What's up with this guy wearing hiking boots?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm breaking these in.
Yeah, I wouldn't wear these out like this. Usually I wear like a White's boot or a Red Wing boot.
And they're like, listen, boy, come in here with that attitude.
I just like tuck away by myself and like smoke a really strong cigar.
Where's your favorite city to tour to disappear in? Like when you go there and you're like, man, I love this city because when I do the gig, I can go do whatever. I do X, Y, Z when I'm there.
I like, there's some cities I've grown to like. I like Chicago a lot. I like,
my hometown.
Oh, is it?
What do you do in Chicago while you're there?
Eat meat.
Yeah, see.
I'll do the food thing. What else have I got?
Constantly.
Okay, I'm not going to be drinking beers or smoking cigars.
Right.
You eat whatever the food is of the place.
Do you go to events or museums or any of that kind of shit? Or is
sometimes. Sometimes.
Like, yeah. I look for that. Everywhere we go, me and this guy, Chris O'Connor, who goes with me, we'll be pretty
Chris
adamant.
Chris O'Connor.
Great New York comic. Great dude. He's a Philly kid, but he lives in New York now.
But was he out here? Who
no.
am I thinking of?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No, he's a New York guy now. He lives with Shane Gillis in New York. You know Shane?
Yeah, I know that name.
Shane got hired and fired by SNL the same week.
Oh, right. The
that
guy
story.
Got in trouble for saying what?
Say it. Go ahead and say it. And we'll put it in there.
I don't remember which one he said.
Yeah, I don't remember either. It's just scrolling above us. No, but Chris always is like, hey, I found this museum. Do you want to go? Yeah. And I'm always down because I do want to go. I try to get cultured. I don't have a lot of culture. I didn't come from a.
Yeah, you can't tell me anything about yourself because you're going to do my podcast tomorrow.
Okay.
So it's tricky.
Okay.
It's a tricky situation.
I won't say anything.
You just said you're stupid.
I am stupid.
Oh, okay.
And I don't have any culture.
Yeah.
Did you grow up with culture?
Yeah, I did.
You did?
I did.
Because your dad was a doctor.
No, because my mother was an artist. My dad had
saying you had the money to fund the art.
Well, no, but I mean, no, my mother was interested in art.
Sure.
So she would take me places when she was like, we would go, most of my family was in New Jersey, right? So that's where my parents grew up, but we lived in New Mexico because that's where my father decided to start his life. So we would go back and my mom would, we'd go around these exhibits at like the Museum of Modern Art and shit for the big Picasso retrospective or the Cezanne retrospective. And she was just engaged with that. So I got a lot of that,
right.
Mostly visual art.
What was her art medium?
She was a painter and she also did photography and she did some silk screening. She went back to get her master's in college. You know, after I think I'd gone to college, but she never finished it. But she's always was always painting and doing shit.
Did she have kind of a hero aspect in your life?
No.
No, huh?
No, but because of her, I think there was always my parents were pretty hands off and relatively irresponsible and selfish. But it was good. I think it was better than getting my ass kicked by my parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But she was always very supportive of whatever. And if I drew things or I did photography or whatever, she was always impressed or excited about that.
Sure.
So I did that stuff.
Say I'm wrong, but you seem like, because I'm this way, I was embarrassed to tell people I did comedy for a long time. Did you, when you first started, were you telling them that you did comedy or did you hide it?
No, I told them, but like the worst part about telling anybody anything, they only know three comics.
Sure.
So for however long it takes you to appear on something that their friends will see, that you're not really doing anything.
Yeah.
They weren't like, you know, why are you wasting your life? But they were like, so is there any way I can see that? I don't know. It's
That's somewhat supportive. That's show it to us, I guess.
Would come see me, you know.
Oh, they
and
would. They,
yeah, yeah. And, you know, and now my dad comes. If my dad's in the audience, I will just tear him an asshole for half an hour. And he loves it.
He does?
And it's to the point that the audience is like, this is weird. And he's just back there crying.
So losing it?
Yeah.
Are you bringing up personal shit?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the sort of dynamic, man. You know, my dad was kind of a depressive. So that was sort of the relationship after a certain point. But they would come see me even when I sucked. I think the hardest hit I took family-wise was when I did my first HBO half hour, 95. And my grandma, Goldie, who was really a person who turned me on to comedy in a way, because she would go to Vegas and see, like, she loved Buddy Hackett and these, you know, Don Rickles, and she would talk about them. My grandfather loved slapstick and shit. They dug that stuff. But she, I guess, sat down a bunch of her friends, you know, to watch my 95 HBO special. And like,
I can feel it.
Yeah. And I never heard from her.
Ever again?
No, no, no.
But she ended up dying shortly after.
When I finally talked to her, she was like, why is it so filthy? What do you?
But you're not a filthy comic.
No, but it was all the saying the fuck.
Oh, saying the word fuck. Oh,
yeah, and I overdid it. And
yeah.
Because like when you do HBO, for some reason, you know, I've done a million Conans and everything. When you have to do it clean, you do it.
Yeah.
But if you don't,
you don't. Yeah, that's it. That's the rule of comedy. Do I have to be clean? No, I'm not gonna.
But it's so weird. You know, these guys are like, I can't do 5 minutes without saying fuck. You're like, really?
I'm sure you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're that is the first indicator. If there's some sort of like test for someone who's going to sabotage your entire life, it's that.
Right.
I can't do 5 minutes without saying fuck. No, you might as well quit.
Right.
Because you're
it's not going to work. This is going to be a tough go around, dude. If that's all you need. But when you do HBO, you think you have the freedom to just say whatever you want.
Well, that whole thing, like I was flying by the seat of my pants. That thing is this rare. Eventually, you know, I kind of honed it, but I've done it this way before. But I was, when I did that HBO special in 95, I was a club comic. I started in regular stand-up clubs. But at that time in 95, that's when that alt thing started in New York, right?
Yes.
So I would go do these these alt things where I would just like improvise, and it was all bitter, weird, dark shit, but I would just, it was good for me because that's how I generate. I don't write things down. I don't know how you work. But so I was in that mode. So for some reason, for that HBO half hour, I was like, I'm just going to kind of wing it.
You wait for the fucking special?
Yeah. So like, you know, I had, so like I had like an outline, I had stuff I was doing, but I wasn't tight. You know, I did a thing that I didn't realize I was going to do, a story. Thank God I did it. It saved the whole goddamn special.
You didn't even know there was no plan to do that as a closer or anything like that?
No.
Nothing?
No, I think, I can't even remember what I closed with. But there was this long story, there's this great story about going to a Jerry Garcia concert that like people remember. And it's a good story. But I literally, on the special, you see me go like, am I going to do that? Yeah, okay, I'll do it. And it was like ridiculous. Right. It was such a wasted opportunity. And I've done that a couple of times. But I understood why my grandmother was upset. Because I went up there, I'd smoked weed earlier in the day. And I was sort of like, I'm going to honor what I'm doing. There's another one that's really bad. It was at the Aspen Comedy Festival. It was a show that they shot up there called Kicking Aspen. Boy, did I tank. Oh, my God. So I'm in that same sensibility. It's like, I've got this long story. And it's good. There are beats in it. I'm gonna go. I'm gonna just do one story. And
never done it before, by the way.
No, I've done it before.
Yeah, but not enough.
Not like that. No.
Yeah.
And but like when you're in a story and ain't working, you're stuck, dude.
No, you have to tell the rest of the story.
Oh yeah.
You can't just go anyway. You guys, you know how it goes.
No.
You have to just trudge all the way through.
Oh, it was the worst.
And nothing.
Oof, bad.
Do you have that tape?
No, I don't think so.
See, those are the tapes you need to keep.
A friend of mine said, I saw that especially on Dragging Aspen.
Did it hurt you? Did those things ever hurt you back then?
Oh, the terrible dude. Like,
no, I just mean industry-wise. Did it ever clip you a little bit? Like, you know, this fear of like, oh, if I do a bad set, it's going to take me down a peg.
Did nothing for me ever.
That's my thing. It's this fake fear, right? That everyone goes, if they see me do bad here, da da da. It doesn't matter.
Most of the time, no one's really watching, and the only way, you know, you have to sort of accumulate that reputation.
You have to do it a lot.
Well, it's just sort of like I think. By and large, I was somebody people didn't know what to do with. Huh. You know, like I was angry. You know, clearly I was hanging in and holding on and had some respect. But I did, you know, 50 Conans. I still couldn't sell a fucking ticket. Do you know what I mean?
It's wild.
Yeah. I mean, who knows when you're going to congeal?
Was that part of the reason that the podcast thing was birthed?
No, I mean, that was no. But what I was going to say was, did it hurt me? When I tanked, I thought personally, like, you know, I thought
that it clip you in the business a little bit.
No, it broke my fucking spirit.
Of course.
Because like I remember, like, dude, there have been nights like that. You know, that Chevy Chase roast was really one of the worst nights of my life.
Why?
And well, they sweetened the fuck out of it because I tanked, and I'm not good at insulting people unless I want to hurt them.
Right.
Like, you know,
I'm not good at it either. I don't like that.
If I'm insulting you, it's because I'm defensive it's preemptive.
And I'm like, fucking mean it.
Yeah, I want cut
it's
in there.
It's not ha ha ha. I mean this. I'm going to say this.
There's a way to do it. I think I've gotten better at it as I've gotten less threatened, but it depends who it is. But I tanked so hard at that fucking roast, man. Everyone did until Lisa Lampanelli. That's how she became a big star. She was the only one that had a good set that night.
She crushed. Yeah.
So that night I was in that hotel at the Hilton, and there's like 2,000 people in that ballroom, dude, you know, and I'm up in my room with my friend Sam Lipsyte crying, going like, I'm not doing this anymore, man. I'm not doing it. In a tux, I'm crying.
And Sam was being supportive. He was like, it's okay, man. It wasn't that bad.
You know, kind of. He was kind of like, it wasn't, you know, it's bad when your friend can't even muster up a spin on it. It's not that important. No one. Who's going to see it?
Who the fuck cares? Yeah.
There's that.
Who cares? Right. Who cares is an easy way to get out of your own way.
I have hurt myself in the career, yes. I've hurt myself in the business.
What do you think hurt you the most? What did you do that hurt you the most? What do you think?
I've got confirmation on this, man.
Okay.
I fucked a publicist. That's not great. Don't do that.
Don't fuck publicists.
No.
Yeah.
No. Because if they get mad at you, consider what their job is. Yeah. So That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to her. That didn't help. That was bad, but I wasn't really ready to go yet. But one night when Comedy Central used to be a joint venture by Viacom and HBO, and then it shifted totally to Viacom and it had different owners, owners, but the people they brought in, Doug Herzog, mm-hmm. who I think might still be there.
I do. I think so.
And I mean, this is in early 90s. I don't remember when it was, but they brought in Doug Herzog and Eileen Katz from MTV, who I couldn't stand. Like, when I was coming up in New York, you know, they would do these things where everyone was doing these, you know, MTV had two or three different showcase shows and you try to get on them, and we all did them.
It was stand up on MTV?
Yeah. Like MTV Half Hour, MTV whatever.
No, I don't remember.
Oh, that. Yeah. They did a bunch of different shows with, you know, 8-10 minute sets.
Sure.
Whatever. Showcase shows. There's a few of them that they had. Whatever. So Eileen Katz always bothered me, you know, because you'd meet with these people and they just, I always had a problem with executives. I never understood that you had to respect them. Here's what I didn't understand, and I tell people, is that like when you start out, wherever you are, like here in this community, in the show business community, there are assistants for big managers that are starting with you. There are people in publicity. There are people in management. They're all at your level. You're the new comic. They're new at their jobs and they're all going to go up.
Right.
So if you're new at your job going like, fuck you, who the fuck are you? You work for that? Fuck you. Like they're all going to go up and you're going to be the fuck you guy.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to somehow figure out how not to be a team player, but not to be an asshole just because someone else's lackey.
Right.
Because that lackey is going to be running something.
Sure.
It's true.
Every single time.
Like there's a guy that worked for my manager that I think is retarded. I'm sorry.
But you think he is.
No. I don't know. I don't. That word keeps creeping up on me too. I feel bad about it.
But it is fun to say, isn't it?
It kind of is.
Because it means something.
But it's not. But then you get into that old joke where you try to defend the word and it's not. You know what? You know why? You know who it hurts? Huh. Not just intellectually challenged people, but their parents and their relatives.
Yeah. My parents have never complained.
That they have a retarded son?
Yes, they don't care.
But
okay, so this young man was not your favorite.
Well, no, it was just that they all end up like, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I had to leave my management is because I had a manager who I'd been with for 20 years. That's the other thing about show business is that these relationships get stale, but they're not going to get rid of you. Why should they? Doesn't what do they care?
Yeah, they're just still making money on you.
Well, no, even if they're not, they just have you hanging around. He might pop.
Right.
And if he does, like, then we'll jump in.
Right. That's right.
But he pushed me over to the junior.
To the lackey.
And I was like, gotta go.
Yeah.
But here's what happened. This was the great event. So Doug Herzog and Eileen Katz from MTV took over Comedy Central. And I was doing a show at Catch a Rising Star in its second location over by FIT when it was like, it was not a great location. But it was some sort of big event. And it was all these people from Comedy Central who had come almost like a private party, you know? And it's just my tone sometimes gets me into trouble.
Sure.
Like if anyone else would have said this, I don't think it would have been problematic. But I was on stage and I said, I'm really happy that Doug and Eileen have taken over Comedy Central because I think all of television should look like a round-the-clock pie-eating contest. And somehow...
Did it kill?
Well, but
it did well for sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it got back to him. And from what I heard from executives from the time, they had a corporate retreat like the following weekend. And Herzog was so lit up about it that he was like, part of the fucking presentation was don't give Mark Maron anything.
That's the opening statement.
Basically,
thanks for being here. Let's not give Mark Maron shit. Right. Moving forward.
He said it was like that.
Jesus.
Yeah.
But that's not even that.
Exactly.
But also, did you carry yourself that way around them? Was it a very like, ugh, I have to meet you because I don't fucking care.
I think I was misunderstood. I think I'd like to frame it that way.
Have you felt that way your whole life?
Misunderstood?
Yeah.
No, I know when I'm being a dick.
Right. Were you doing that on purpose to Katz and Herzog? When you would see them and say hi, would you project that thing? Like, look, I do it too, where they know I'm not happy about it. And my wife is always like, they can tell, be a little bit nicer. I'm bad at faking that thing, being like, it's hard. And so I know when I do it, you know when you did it. And you know you probably did it. And it so it, it layered the idea that you didn't like those people.
No, for sure. And I don't know what the hell I was thinking. I didn't know that it was a business.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, I just wanted to be a comic.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, you know, I'm just going to keep doing this work. I want to be a comic and I want to be a great comic. And I thought it all kind of fell into place, you know, after that. But it doesn't. Especially if you have those kind of weird entitled expectations. Like, I've been doing this. Fuck you. I'm good at this. Go fuck yourself. Yeah.
That's not going to work.
There was another time where but see the thing, these people talk and I had no control. There's one other thing I remember that like I'm still embarrassed about.
Give it to me.
I went in on I got a network callback, like a studio. It was like a final callback.
How
on
recent
thing.
Is this?
This is a long time.
Okay.
And I didn't understand. I was not a character, right? What I was doing on stage, the angry guy or whatever, it was all real.
It was you.
Right.
Yeah.
So when people are sort of like, we get him. Yeah, no, you don't. There's no control here. There's no valve. I don't get me.
Right.
I'm fucking barely keeping it together. So they're like, you know, you're the new cranky guy. I'm like, whatever. I don't know.
Cranky guy.
So I get this callback for this part of a guy who's like an edgy guy. The word was edgy. This guy's got an edge to him.
Cool.
It was actually a behind the scenes show at a music network or something. And I don't remember who was doing it or what, but it was like all the brass was going to be there. Like it was a big network thing. There were real other actors, people I recognized in television going in.
Right.
And, you know, before I go in, the casting agent, you know, it's one of those, you know how those rooms are where you read or show for everybody. It's the worst.
Worst.
It's not just like the casting director and the producer and the writer. This is like the network.
Oh,
this
yeah.
is like the final
the studio,
thing.
The network,
right,
the producer.
Right.
Yeah.
So she comes up to me. She goes, look, man, you know, you can really cut loose here. You can really, you know, this guy's an angry guy. So you do it. And I'm like, okay. And I went in there, dude. I don't even know what happened. But it was like my entire life. Worth of anger.
Just blacked out.
Blasted it. I don't even think I hit the lines. I was just yelling at the entire infrastructure of a network.
Yeah.
Just screaming. And I got done and I could just see on the looks that it wasn't even like an audition. It was just sort of like, is this okay?
Right.
Is he okay?
A breakdown.
And the way the casting agent walked me out, she's like, okay. You know, like...
Had security come?
Almost.
Okay, Mark, thank you. Thank you, Mark.
And it was so cathartic for me, but like in retrospect, it must have been just like terrifying and weird.
And how did that gig go?
Well, yeah, I didn't get it. I didn't get it.
I know.
and this stuff is happening. This is another better example. This wasn't that long ago. It was shortly after my wife left me, maybe 2007. I had this, I couldn't fucking, before the podcast, I had nothing. I was like almost done. So I had this weird booking agent. And this is another story about the manager, right?
With his friend.
The manager, the lackey.
Yeah.
So now like the lackey's my guy. And I got this gig through this weird booking agent. She's a nice lady, but she books, you know, I don't know. She primarily deals with people that do one-man shows as historical characters. She's got a great Frank Lloyd Wright guy.
Ooh, yeah. Yes. Okay. Set me up.
Yeah. So, but she got me this book, a college, you know, it was a co-headlining gig with Tom Papa. And somehow I got booked into it by this woman.
You and Tom Papa.
Yeah. A co-headlining gig down in St. Louis Obispo or somewhere. I don't remember where it was. And for some reason, man, like, you know, Tom's like, hey, I got to, you know, get home for a second. Can I go first? I'm like, oh, I can't. Okay. And now I'm freshly divorced. I'm driving up there with my buddy.
Good friend.
He is a good friend. I'm losing my mind. Anyways.
Yeah.
And it's raining. It never rains here. Pouring. It's like torrential.
Yeah.
And we get to this gig, it's half filled. And, you know, Tom goes up there and does his clean kind of.
Hey, very, yeah. So clean. That's what I was going to say. I was like, you two are not same thing.
And I get up there, like, I'm like processing being left. And I'm like, you know. I did some really difficult, you know, joke up front about Obama and about, you know, I can't remember what it was, but it was challenging.
How you hated that he was black. I've heard this.
That well, no, but it was a racially charged joke, but it was in the right, it was in the correct direction.
Correct.
But it could be misunderstood just because people, you know, right
when they do this thing, they go,
before
what's he saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So one of those jokes.
Right.
And that just fucking hits the garbage. Just hits the floor. Nothing.
That's why Papa's like,
Yeah. Exactly.
Getting
out of here. He's driving already. He's driving, and I've erased him with my fucking horrendous negative. And I have this bad habit where if I'm fucking going to eat it, I'm going to eat it hard, and I'm not going to get off. I'm going to go long.
Yeah.
I'm going to sit down, and we're going to lean into this.
And just dig deep.
Oh, yeah.
You like that? Being in this, like,
No, I don't like it. But I think the part of me is like, well, if I'm going to tank, I don't want them to say that, like, I ran off.
Right.
I'm going to give them their money's worth.
Sure.
I'm going to keep trying, and I'm going to fight this out. Because they can leave, and they can go, that was interesting, that was terrible. But, you know, he kept trying. He stayed up there.
Look at him. He stayed in the box. Give him credit.
So I did that. I stayed in the box for like an hour and a half.
Holy
on a
40, shit.
On a 45-minute set that wasn't going well in a big half-filled arena.
Did they walk at all?
With rain.
Did anybody walk?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, you don't. You were black. You were just in your own zone.
And I drive home with Don. It's Don.
Don.
And it's raining. And it was another one of those scenes where it's like, that wasn't that bad, was it? And he's like, hey, no, man. I mean, you know, he had some stuff to say. I'm like, oh, God damn it. And it's fucking awful.
Just
right?
just feeling that thing for an hour and a half on the way home.
Just, dude, I knew it happened.
Have you ever done those corporate gigs where it's to like.
I won't do those.
You never did them?
No. So I've had maybe one or two. Oh, God.
Would you do them today?
No.
If the money was good? Yeah.
No, I won't do them. I don't give fuck the money. I can't do things for money because, like, you know, because then, like, that kind of stuff or stuff there, it's completely not something I should do. It's like, but the money, it's sort of like, yeah, but I'm going to get there. And I'm like, ugh, there were gigs where I used to get Fallout gigs. You don't know they're Fallout gigs until you get there.
Yeah.
You know, like Anthony Clark couldn't, I'm like, what? You know,
it's like, thanks for doing this for us. You're like, what do you mean?
we were supposed to have Bill Maher and him.
Oh, cool. I thought you guys wanted me. We're happy that you're here.
One time I took an event. I walk in. It's just like, just husbands and wives at a thing. And these men were not me men.
No.
No, and I'm rare. Like, there's not a lot of me men. Mm-hmm. But these guys are definitely dudes. And there's an ice sculpture. And there's a buffet. And there's a mic in the middle of a dance floor with no real different taste. There's no stage. Mm-mm. And this woman's walking me out and, you know, she's like, what do you talk about? I'm like, you know, AIDS.
Sorry, HIV, but mostly the transition into AIDS. You know, that's kind of my crux of my stuff.
Yeah, like, yeah, drugs, you know. She's like, they like sports. Can you talk about sports? I'm like, cannot. And I just sat up there quietly talking to myself on a microphone in front of an ice sculpture.
Not one laugh.
Nothing.
Yeah.
So I'm driving home from St. Louis Obispo, right? Yep. And the next day, the woman who booked me, panicky, calls me up. She goes, what happened? And I'm like, I don't know. I did a long set. She goes, they said you did a late night set? What does that mean, a late night set? And I'm like, that's pretty astute. It was kind of it was an hour and a half late night set.
Yeah,
she's like, they're
set.
Not going to book my people anymore. I'm like, look, I'm sorry. Man,
just say I'm not your people, lady.
Yeah. I felt bad for her, but then the fucking guy, the idiot at my management,
the lackey,
he has no idea about this gig because he didn't book it and he's not even in touch with this woman. So he calls me up. He's like, how was the gig? I heard it went great. I'm like, you did not hear that.
Crushed.
Did not hear that. And he's like, yeah, I heard it went great. I'm like, let's just do this now and maybe we can move forward with our relationship. Tell me you're lying. I've caught you in a lie. There's no way in hell. The woman who booked it just called me. And it was a disaster. Mm. You did not hear I did great. He's like, I did. I heard you did great. Just tell me you're lying.
Stick to the lie.
great. He stuck to it.
Yeah, good for him. He's like, listen, Mark.
That's his job.
I heard what I heard.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. I'm not going to tell you who or where or how, but that's how I heard.
Great.
Do you work with people now like that? Are you still, do you have a team or you're like, you have one agent and that's it?
No, I got people.
You have a whole squad of people still booking you? I feel like some guys get to a place and they dump all that shit.
No, I'm not that guy. Come on, man. I mean, I'm still, I do nice theater gigs, theaters in some place. I'm not an arena act.
Do you want to be an arena act?
What would I do?
They're a nightmare. I got to tell you. I talked to you once.
Yeah, it was like,
it's daunting.
But like, you know, I just remember, like, we don't have to be specific, but I was like, you know, we don't need to.
We've talked about it, you and I, and I said the same thing that I've always said, which is, it's cool to be able to do it. You're like, whoa, it's wild to do this. It's beautiful and strange to be able to gather be in a room with that many people, but it feels so like not stand-up.
But it's a rally.
Yeah.
Depending who you're working with.
Yeah, it's a rally. It's a rally.
You know, like, you gotta, because you even think about, like, even like Kevin Hart is really he's almost like a motivational speaker, right?
Totally.
So like, it's a different thing. Yeah. Like, I still believe, like, it takes me a while to adjust to realize that even in a nice theater where it's sort of like, this is built for performance. Because in my mind, it's like, ceilings are too high.
Yeah, that's true. When you walk into a club with too high ceilings, you're like, what are you guys doing?
Where's the sound going to go?
How'd you guys do this?
Why is it like this?
Right.
Sound system is very important. I'm very, I'm so fucking like happy when I'm like, I walk in like, pow, whoa, this is good.
I do love that.
Right?
In a tight, small room.
Oh, yeah.
Like Denver, something underground like that.
But Denver's almost cheating. You're sort of like, that wasn't that funny. You guys are going a little.
But I do like it.
Oh, it's good. Yeah. It's definitely a booster.
But because what it does is it reminds you, though, that like sometimes you deserve a little freebie in that world. You know what I mean? Like, you've been through enough shit gigs where you're like, I don't give a fuck that it's a little cheating. I need this.
No, I always go there. I'm going to go there. Like, I'm going to try to, like, coming back to stand up, I've only done like 5 shows.
Like, so, in town or road?
No, I didn't do anything. I didn't do any outdoor shows.
Why not? No, why not?
Fuck that. I've worked my whole life.
Not to cars, but just on stage.
None of it. I don't want to do it.
I like it. I got to tell you, I've been doing the outdoor shows. Fucking love it.
Really?
It's felt so, well, I did the cars once at the Magic Castle. Burr was like, she wants your number. Do you want to go do it?
Yeah.
And Bill was doing a fuckload of them. And I said, okay, I'll go do one. And I went and did one. And I had that feeling that you used to have where you're like, I could fuck quit. Comedy's bullshit anyway. Fuck all this. It's worthless. This is what we've come to.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I'm never going to do a car show ever again. So I never did another one. And I just started doing the outdoor shows maybe a month or two ago.
I'm sure they're fine.
They're good.
For me, like, I think I don't, in my brain, I wasn't really ready for it. Like, I did fucking Oddball. I've done like 23,000 people outside.
That's way worse to me.
No, terrible.
Yeah.
But I understand how that worked. But for me, there was some part of my brain that's like, I don't need the stress of that. I don't, like, I'm going to wait until I'm home.
Yeah.
Like at the store or whatever, because like, I don't know what I've got. I don't know if I've got anything. I don't know if I need to do this anymore.
Mm.
But if I'm going to go back to it and figure it out, I'm going to do it at a club because that's the context that honors what I do.
Totally.
I don't want to go out there and try to pretend like I have an act in the middle of this shit show, you know, for people, you know, wedged in between buildings, socially distanced at a fake nightclub in a parking lot.
So specific. Oh, it's so true.
You know,
but you've done the store now.
Yeah.
And do you like it?
It's great.
Okay, because I hated when I did the main room and it was like a quarter cap.
I didn't mind it at all because, like, you know what brain I was in is sort of like, I got to build shit, you know, and I, you know, I've got to talk. I've got, you know, this is where this happens.
Right.
And I used to do shows for 5 people.
Sure.
I came up in New York.
Yeah.
I used to do the Boston Comedy Club on a Tuesday when we had to drag 3 people in. There's nothing strange about performing for a half a house at a comedy club.
Right.
We came up that way.
You just don't, but you're so used to not doing it anymore. That's why
I guess, but it's still not, it's not abnormal.
No, you know
it's
what
not,
it feels
it's
like.
It's not a parking lot.
Yeah, no, that's weird.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, but see, the thing is, it's like, yeah, you got a late night audience, but they're there at the beginning and they're excited.
Yeah, they want to be there.
Yeah, you know, you do, you're aware of each pocket of laughter and stuff,
mm-hmm.
but they're supportive because we're all trying to readjust.
Right.
So I was thrilled. And last night I finally kind of really got into a place, you know.
Well, see, I didn't mind the OR because that's a special thing to
me. That's where I started. I said, don't put me in the main room.
Yeah, that's my thing. See, the main room that I did once, and I said to, we won't mention names, but I said to the person that's there booking, I said, I don't want to do the main room. Just give me the OR. The OR just has such its own working vibe anyway. The main room is just, it's still daunting when it's half filled or quarter filled. You're like, ugh, it feels so like.
It's a little weird. I did it one night and it was okay.
I like the reciprocation of the OR, don't you?
Oh no, I love the OR. Now it's like it's vaxxed capacity.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah. Like they're filling it up.
See, you're right. Cause initially they said you had to bring a card or you have to have a card or a negative test, but now has to have a card. Otherwise you can't get in. Right.
That's good. I love it. Fuck those people.
Yeah. Everyone who's anti-vax, huh?
Whatever. Yeah. I don't care. It's like, fuck you. We get that fun.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, we did it.
And it's private business. So what are you going to do? Fuck the vaccination passports. It's not private business. They don't want you in
that's
there.
That's right. Bye.
Yeah. Fuck you.
You don't want to serve cakes to gay people. Yeah. We're not going to let you in. This is how the world works.
It is. It's so funny that these, like, ugh, fuck them. But it's like, it's good fodder. But no, the main room, the main room on a good night can be tricky.
Oh, no.
That place can
truly
be packed and suck.
Truly. And it's only because of the dancing of comics that went on before you.
Maybe.
Too.
Sometimes that place is just stale. I don't get it. I've been there at nights where no one's doing it.
Right.
No one can get them over the hump.
Right.
And I don't know why.
Well, it's something about the vibe that happens.
Sometimes it is the audience's fault. They are an organism. Once there's that many of them and they're tight, they're one brain.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's shitty. It's dull.
When I moved to here in 06, where were you? Were you here in 06?
Yeah.
You were.
Well, I was getting left by my wife, and then I went to
that's why I
back
came
to
here.
New
I
York
that
in
that
2007. Because I don't remember us really crossing over. So I was away a lot from like 2006 to 2008.
Well, I knew of you. I knew you. And then I knew of you coming and going. And
yeah.
You were kind of one of those guys because the club back then wasn't what it became. It was still in this weird kind of holy place and dull and empty all the time.
Yeah.
And guys didn't really talk to us.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was just kind of like a young guys there were never really welcomed until I would say probably 2010 is when people would chat with younger comics.
Huh.
It was a weird divide when I first showed up. It was like, don't fucking go over there. I just would hang out with the improv.
Yeah, I never go to the improv.
Were you never an improv guy?
No, because like, fuck them. I don't have
Why fuck them?
Because they never gave me anything. They never helped my career. They did nothing for me ever. They would.
Did you showcase for Bud at any point or no?
Sure, way back in the day, but then I was like, they didn't want me. You know, when I got back, once I established, you know, one night I headlined there, and Mencia came in and they let him bump me on my night.
On your headlining night?
Out of spite because he wanted to, you know, feed me my ass for some reason.
Right.
So he got up there and he did 45 minutes and I left about 20 into it.
Wow.
And I'm like, you're going to let him do that? Fuck you. I'm not going to, you know.
Don't you think those days are over?
Yeah. But here's the other problem with the improv, ultimately, because the club itself is one thing, but it's the booking arm of it.
Sure.
I don't know who's in charge of there over there, but it used to be this woman, Erin. And she would always say, oh, we love you, we love you. I'd see her at festivals. Love you, we love you. And they just give me fallout weeks, you know, in papered rooms. And granted, I couldn't draw, but like they would give me, like, I was working in the Schomburg room.
In Chicago, yeah. Well, in the burbs.
Like when it opened-ish, you know, I picked up a week on the fly. And when I got there, it was Rich Jenny's week that he had canceled. And on the Saturday, he killed himself.
Wow. You didn't think maybe you should do that? You were like, maybe I'm next. Maybe.
No, I died on stage. There was no one there. They told all his people.
They were like, Rich killed himself, guys.
15 people I'm drawing at the place that seats 500.
That's huge.
So, yeah. So I understood it to a degree, but I don't like the way they run rooms. They've never been nice. The corporate element of it is daunting.
Right.
I never sell tickets that well, even at Irvine. So it's not my joint.
Right. It's just not it's not your vibe.
Yeah. It's not my venue. It's not my audience for some reason. Like my people, like I remember one time I got booked at that Mall of America room and like, I have fans now that and then they had to drive out there and go through that fucking rigmarole. My people will go to a theater. My people will go to Acme. My people will go to the comedy works.
Or rock venues, right?
Yeah, but I don't love those. But yeah. If I don't have an option, I'd rather do a little theater. But and my people will go to independent comedy clubs. So improvs are not, they're just not my bag.
Right.
And I don't know who the hell goes to those. But I guess, and they always paper them. So in my mind, I was just sort of like, they did nothing for me. I will make them no money.
I appreciated the honesty.
And I had an agent that I fired because he wouldn't stop trying to get me to do off nights at improv.
Well, that's probably because he's getting a nice kickback from that whole political. That's the other side of it that I don't really, that bothers me so much is like, I'm always like, what do you have in with these people?
He kept doing these things. I said, I'm not working improv.
Yeah.
And then he'd be like, what do you think about this Tuesday? Do a door deal. I'm like, what are we doing? And then like, he did it again. I'm like, I'm done with you.
Yeah.
And yeah. I even have another agent in mind.
just fly free. Well, that's because they all have connections and they have business. Look, my dad always said to me, everyone's trying to keep their fucking job. And you learn it as you get older that you're like, oh yeah, all these guys are just wanting to keep their job.
Yeah.
They have the right things to move to the thing to make sure that they're satisfying whatever partnerships that they've created. And we are just chess pieces that they go,
I hate that. I know that.
Yeah.
And also you're a favor. That was the worst thing about me is that, you know, I had powerful management. But I couldn't fucking give it away in TV or movies or anything, or even getting booked on stage. But my management sort of, hey, do me a favor, see if you can get married something. So every once in a while, I think I would have agents. But I really didn't. They were just favors to my powerful manager. And they'd go nowhere. To the point where years ago, Berkowitz took me on.
Really?
Yeah. His company, because my manager said, try to get him some work. And it was just clubs then. And he literally said months later, I'm not going to get you any work. I can't. Sorry. It's not going to happen. It's nothing personal. I can't.
Yeah, honesty is good.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay.
Thanks.
Yeah, exactly. But years later, he took me back on and said, I felt bad about that. So now we're going to do it. And, he was fine. But when, his guy, Joe, went over to UTA or whatever, I went with Joe because Joe was always the guy who I was working with because, Mike was doing arenas.
Yeah.
Mike was, doing international soccer stadiums with my peers.
The O2 Arena.
Yeah. And I'm like, I get it. But this dude was, on the ground with me. So I'm going to go with him.
You shifted with him. That's what I always say. I go with the people. The acronyms don't mean anything. When they're like, you're going to go over to this other place. It's like,
I don't care.
It's a title.
Yeah. I don't know what they do sometimes. I was at WME for years and I'm like, I don't know. And I just left.
You just like, I'm taking off. But then look.
And blindly, I have good people now. I mean, sometimes, it really depends what you want, what you're willing to do.
Yeah.
But I have a good guy, over at ICM. Uh-huh. And, he's an old timer, but he's not really an old timer, but he's a smart guy. I like him. And I like the team over there for what I'm doing. My management is, they're great. He's a guy I've known forever. I ended up there and he's been around for a long time. And I like them over there. And my booking guy is Joe. So and I'm like, I'm not desperate or crazy. And I wouldn't, there's part of me would rather not do anything.
Yeah.
Is the next guest here? What's happening?
That's mail.
An animal?
Oh. That's how we get mail.
Do you squat here or is this something you pay for?
I live here. I live here. I have to do what I have to do, Mark.
In there, in the closet?
Yeah, in that little, this is my kitchen, my little kitchenette.
I can't believe I'm getting so specific and I'm just giving names of agencies.
Yeah, who cares?
I don't know.
Well, you didn't say anything bad about it.
No, it's just like, it got to this point where, most of my visibility, I created myself on a fluke. I didn't know, the podcast, I was at the end of my tether. I was at the end of my rope and then things turned around. And now I'm okay and I save my money. I didn't spend money and I can pull some people here and there. I've got, people who will come see me.
Yeah.
And the podcast does very well. And, I've done some TV and movies now. And but I'm not freaking out. I don't need to be a bigger star. I'm just trying to figure out how to challenge myself to feel like it's something that is not just a weird pretendy thing. How to do a role that's not me.
You like Glow?
Yeah.
You did.
I did.
Yeah.
And then I just did a movie over COVID, which was crazy. But it was a guy that really wasn't like me. And I had to do an accent and shit. And the director seemed happy. But I was like, I got to do this to see if I can apply these skills.
Sure.
Because I can get away with it if you give me a role that's kind of like me.
Yeah.
You know, I can listen. No, some guys are too self-conscious to function on camera. I'm not one of them. But a lot of comics, they're sort of, you can just see them like, they can't get out of themselves.
Right. Well, because they want to do the comic thing. A lot of guys want to go back to the stand-up
thing. I don't really know what it is. But some people just are awkward. It's stilted, you know, when they have to engage with other people.
Right. Right. They become uncomfortable. And I like the acting thing. And
well, you're good at it.
Well, I'm all right. I think your second half of your career, in my personal opinion, will be way more acting than stand-up, because I think you've kind of started to find a groove. I think you've found a lot of stuff that's really good on camera, and you've done some really great stuff. And I don't want to compliment you anymore, because that's all I'm going to give
fine.
You. That's it. For now, that's all I'm going to give you.
Okay. I appreciate it. Yeah. I mean, I feel that, because like even after my last special, I was like, that's the best I can do. And there's enough comics around.
There's so much stand-up is like, what else do you want to achieve as a stand-up that you already haven't done?
I'd like to, there's oddly, you know, my last two specials are the only ones that I really started to sort of structure things. To, like, I start to like structure hours and use callbacks and stuff. I mean, that started literally in the last two specials. Mm-hmm. I started to really like, I'm good at this now. Why not take the time to put things together and practice and see if you can do a through line, challenge myself that way. So there's some things I haven't done. I don't think I do enough voices.
Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure. I can't wait to do your show.
Yeah.
We end this show the same way. Look in the camera, say one word or one phrase to end the episode. When I walk off camera, that's how we end it. One word or one phrase in the camera when I'm gone.
Tired.
In here, we pour whiskey.
Creature in the ginger beard.
Sturdy and ginger.
Like vampires, the ginger gene is a curse.
Gingers are beautiful.
You owe me $5 for the whiskey and $75 for the horse.
Gingers, oh hell no.
This whiskey is excellent.
Ginger. I like gingers.